Welcome to Nationalist Public Radio, Words from the End of the West, with your hosts, Everett Foster, Roderick Kane, James Price, and Brett Stevens.
Welcome to Nationalist Public Radio. This is James Price. I'm joined by Brett Stevens and Kvodolf Gunnar Larsen. How are you today, Kvodolf?
Fine, thank you.
This episode is going to be focused on the topic of deep ecology, and I want to pose this to our guest today. Can you maybe tell us in your words what deep ecology is and sort of your experiences and how you went about arriving at this?
First of all, I don't consider myself a deep ecologist. I consider myself rather real ecologist. The difference is very simple. If we're talking about ecology or the protection of nature, which is for me the most important thing, the problem is that just like with anything else, humans tend to bend certain concepts. So deep ecology can be, I think, actually bent by different people to reach their different agenda. If I'm talking about the protection of nature, then that is something that you cannot bend. It's something that you have to base on realism, reality, and that is where real ecology comes to place.
What is the difference between real ecology and regular garden variety environmentalism of the type we hear talked about incessantly in our media, and yet nothing seems to happen?
Any form of environmentalism represents the needs of humans. Real ecology represents the needs of nature. If you protect nature for humans, it's completely different when you protect nature for nature itself.
How does this translate into policy? For example, we want to protect nature for nature itself. What does that mean about how we're going to design our human civilization and how we're going to set aside our needs? How much does that control how we think about everything we need to do as human beings?
First, you have to start with the definitions. According to real ecology, nature is the wilderness and biodiversity. If you look at environmentalism, it actually says it's the protection of the environment. In this case, environment is a place where humans live. We have to understand that modern humans don't need a wilderness or biodiversity. So actually, whatever solution you suggest is irrelevant as long as you have modern human existence and as long as you have overpopulation. Theoretically, if you could solve these two problems with a snap of a finger, you would end up in a situation where it would be possible through education, through what we learned, separate human life, which wouldn't be existence anymore, and nature, where there would be enough places for biodiversity, for wilderness.
Can you maybe expound on maybe the magnitude of the crisis that we're looking at right now, and perhaps steps that we could do from a policy perspective that we could do to address them?
A good example is when I asked Brett to write an article about all the important things today. He started off with the biggest one, which is overpopulation. Actually, this is something that needs to be tackled first, which is obvious population control, because humans are not capable, not able, and are not interested in lowering the numbers by some kind of force. Maybe sooner or later, nature will do this for us, but at the moment, we need strict and brutal population control measures.
I agree, and I recognize the need for that. I mean, we've just seen China basically do away with the one-child policy. But it's interesting because they're one of the few countries we've seen that took a proactive approach towards this. Looking at this from a macro perspective, how would we even go about to tell the world some sort of mandate upon how to regulate population?
You cannot apply something today which is unpopular and in this case which would be unprofitable. We reached the evolutionary step in the human history where humans are us. The more, the better. You have more consumers, so you can produce more and you have more profit. The solution to all the problems has to start where it should start. It should start with you. So actually, what real ecology is proposing, as opposite to deep ecology or any other form of protection of nature, is no compromise. So you have to start from yourself. Don't contribute to the problem. In this case, it's overpopulation. To be more and sacrifice something for nature.
Looking at this from an anthropological perspective, a lot of people, when you bring up this argument of overpopulation, they kind of posit to you, well, okay, well, if we can reach our carrying capacity, then we're fine. If we can raise more forests and grow more soy fields, then why is that a problem if we can feed all our people? I guess that's sort of the main argument you're making, where you're actually proving the consequences of this in the world around them as well. It's like beyond a matter of convincing people, okay, well, just because we could feed these many people doesn't mean we should feed these many people. My question is, how would you begin to actually show this in real numbers to them, the consequences of this, and what sort of population would you deem as ideal globally?
There's no certain number which exists. If you like, you can go with what Pentti Linkola said. He said a few million or a few hundred million. But the question is not about quantity. The question is about quality. Problem is that overpopulation started after Second World War, I think, and human society reached a point where there was too much killing, and they said, okay, that this needs to stop. And obviously the outcome is that there's too much people. And in the course of human history and evolution, we conquered all the epidemics, all the diseases. It's like there are no wars, nothing. So actually there's more and more people. It's quality. It's the same like when you have with animals. If you have too much of animals, then actually their quality goes down. Problem is today, it's not a question that we have too much people. It's the question that we have too much worthless and useless people, which contribute to the destruction of the planet for everybody else. If there would be a possibility to ship all the stupid people away from the planet to another planet, that would be fine. But obviously that's not possible. So the only problem is today not to contribute to the problem on a personal level.
What sort of political activity can we use to encourage people to see the value in real ecology? Like, what would lead to that change?
I don't think it's possible, because the whole idea of real ecology is actually pointing out the real problem and working from there. When real ecology says that humans are stupid, or the majority of humans are stupid, actually you cannot apply a system where you will say that stupidity is illegal. Problem is that real ecology is based on something which is really achievable, and that is starting from yourself. In a political format, you can use deep ecology or any other format. Real ecology is above and beyond politics. It's above and beyond explaining humans that what they actually do will lead to the destruction of the whole planet. Because as the moment we speak, there are hundreds of people who are dealing with how to get people off this planet so they can survive. The problem is simple. If you want to take up the fight, you would actually have to take up the fight with human nature itself, with something that is genetically encoded in humans. And as a real ecologist, I don't see that as a possibility. A good example is the effect of water, air, and soil, on which real ecology is based, in terms of you cannot last without air for a certain amount of time, you cannot last without water for a certain amount of time, and you cannot last without food for a certain amount of time. This is a fact that you cannot change and you cannot bend. The problem is that because water, air, and food was taken for granted for so long, actually it's genetically encoded in us that this will be like this forever. And if you would like to achieve a real ecological solution, you would have to actually change this genetically encoded notion. And that is only possible on a personal level, like with myself, when I personally and voluntarily started to respect and look after water, air, and soil.
Humanity has faced many evolutionary bottlenecks throughout its history, meaning these are challenges which only some are able to pass and the rest do not, and humanity is improved by that filter. Since we know that some people live in an ecologically sound way just by their very nature, is it possible that humanity can evolve or be changed to the point that people instinctively live in what I'm going to call a deep ecological way, meaning that they like to be in balance with nature, not sabotage it, and just have their little portion of it in which they're able to exist comfortably without being opulent and without destroying the natural world. So is there a way that humanity can evolve to be ecologically sane?
I don't think so. The problem is that real ecology is based on the notion that humanity evolved beyond their original programming. So the problem is when you reach a certain level, or for example, if you reach the peak of a mountain in terms of evolution, the only possible way is downhill. And it was many times in human history that there were a certain amount of people, small group of people, which actually, quotation marks, built a higher mountain, you know, built another platform onto the mountain so you can reach it. But the problem is that this is only possible with a handful of humans on the planet. So actually, what's happening with overpopulation today is if you have too much worthless, useless, and stupid people, actually, they will drag this small group downhill. So the problem is they will stumble on the first rock, and they will also pull an avalanche with them. So when this all stops and comes trembling down from the mountain top, it will be one big mess, which in real ecology will be the destruction of the biodiversity and wilderness. The death of biodiversity and wilderness doesn't constitute a situation where human life wouldn't be possible. Human life or human existence can continue on without biodiversity and wilderness, which defines nature in views of real ecology. If somehow humanity survives overpopulation, nature tomorrow will decide, okay, I will thin the numbers, okay, we'll thin down to the 10% what we have now. The problem is if there will be enough wilderness and biodiversity left to actually call it that. That's the main concern of real ecology in terms of it looks after the well-being of nature and not humans.
It seems like we're actually heading in a good direction, meaning that everything that people have done that is illogical is currently failing. Is it possible, in your view, that we can conserve enough seed areas of nature, enough wilderness, such that if there were a great human die-off, we could then restore the old forests, even knowing that it's going to take many generations? Do you think that's possible?
That's a very nice idea. The problem, however, is there's no way, no possibility, or at least nothing that we can see that the numbers of humans will be thinned out. What real ecology is actually saying is it's not bad when humans exterminate a certain life form if they do it, for example, for their survival. So let's say humans exterminated mammoths because they were hungry and had to eat something. That's fine. One life form was eliminated so the other one can survive. But the problem is that humans are exterminating life forms not for their survival, only for fun or to fulfill their empty modern human existence. So the problem is this is a nice idea. It would be possible if you could achieve in this very moment, by the snap of a finger, the thinning of a number of humans. What real ecology is saying that this was happening now is the sixth extinction. Five happened before and planet recovered. There were introduced new life forms. So it's the sixth different version of biodiversity and wilderness, which is fine. But again, this is the first extinction of the whole biodiversity by the hands of humans, of one single life form. And it's not for their survival. It's because they reached evolutionary step where they can do nothing else than to continue their existence. And in this process, they're actually destroying everything, and some things are destroyed or will be destroyed beyond repair. You might say that, fine, we destroy 50-60% of biodiversity, which in a few million years will be replaced with something else. That is also fine, but again, real ecology is saying that these are destroyed not for survival of humans or for survival of other life forms. It's to fulfill the needs of modern humans, and that is the problem in terms of real ecology.
Do you think a naturalistic solution could emerge from this? For example, cutting off entitlement benefits worldwide?
Real ecology is based on reality. Realism, absolutely not. This is something what we all recognize. Overpopulation is the problem, and also democracy. When you have democracy and you have the voting system, then 51% will outvote 49% in anything that you do. So actually, if you present something on a local, on a global scale, which actually don't favor 80% of the population or 90 or whatever, you will not be successful because it's more than 51%. So actually, you will be outvoted in anything that you present. For me, it's a little bit ironic that you present solutions today, not just to save nature in terms of biodiversity or wilderness, but you're also presenting solutions to save humanity itself. But the problem is if you have the majority of people which are worthless, useless, and stupid, cannot apply any solution at all. The only solution would be that the rest will actually wake up and realize that, oh, we are lucky that nature didn't wipe us out and we should learn from our mistakes.
It seems like democracy and modernism and consumerism are all failing at once. So possibly there's a way through. If we had strong dictatorships in most of the world, or at least in the first world, would it be possible to avert this disaster?
Theoretically, yes. It is something that Real Ecology is open to. So let me explain something as well. You mentioned that we should not become murderers. That's fine. That's something which is controversial. Real Ecology never claimed you should pick up a gun and go out and start killing people. Real Ecology only suggested a fantasy solution where all the humans would disappear suddenly, and then nature would have a full 100% and complete possibility to somehow recover. But this is not going to happen. There are only two options. The one that you suggested, which obviously Real Ecology is not based on, but it's not against, or the solution that nature will wipe us out herself.
A number of people have written on this topic, and we like them mainly because they grasp the enormity of the problem, which seemingly most people will not talk about. I'm talking here about Ted Kaczynski and Pentti Linkola, who have each proposed their own solutions and analysis of the problem. What do you think about those two thinkers, and how close are they to what you're writing about and thinking?
These two thinkers are very, very close to Real Ecology. Their thoughts were influences in writing Real Ecology. In a sense, they are real ecologists because they're suggesting real solutions. Interestingly enough, there are already solutions that have been filmed in major Hollywood productions. So if you look at some movies, somebody had an idea how to solve this problem that we have. One of my favorites is that they build a space station above Earth where all the rich lived. And all the poor stayed on the planet. Actually, this is limited to the usage of natural resources. If all the soil is unable to provide us food, we kill off all the game and all the fish, then obviously there's nothing more to eat than ourselves. That's something that also was filmed. The problem is, it's rather to look at all these possibilities of the outcome and trying to find some of them that could actually be implemented. And for example, if you take over the power in a certain country and you would have the means to actually do something about the ecological issue, then it's good to look at these quotation mark solutions as well. When I return back to the ecological thinkers, some of what they said actually is coming true. But the problem is it's 1, 2, 10, 50, 50 people against millions. And this is the ratio that's the problem because they will be run down by the herd. If you're saying that this system will collapse, which is no doubt it will collapse, the problem is, if you look at history, that humans never learned from their mistakes. So actually what you are going to apply will be something that would change itself in the course. So for example, you start with something brand new, fresh, and as the time goes by, it will change itself, and in a circle, you will end up on a situation where we are now.
The root of this problem is that we have an inverted power structure, meaning that the people on the lowest levels are regulating what we're doing instead of the people who are smartest. If that inverted structure were changed, do you think it would be possible for them to introduce slow changes that would gradually change the human population and reduce it such to the point that we could at least stop the ongoing process of ecocide?
Yes, it's brilliant theory. It's the theory that I support. That's why we're doing this interview. It's most logical and ecological that the best should actually rule over the rest. That's no doubt about it. It's exactly the same if you look at, for example, a wolf pack. Yeah, the strongest and the bravest leads the rest of the pack. So that's something which is possible. The problem is, because Real Ecology is based on realism, I don't believe that this will happen. If this would happen tomorrow, in a blink of an eye, it has my full support. And this is something that could be done. But again, in your opinion, deep ecology is the first or the fifth step. So you reach number one and then get to number six and some ecological solutions. Logically, using common sense, slowly, with population control, with education, with punishment and so forth, you can reach. The problem is how Real Ecology is based on the notion that something has to happen now and something has to happen quickly and something has to happen that would be big enough to thin the numbers down. And then from that point, this solution that you propose would be much easier because if there would be ecological disaster, the smartest would logically survive.
Would you admit, perhaps, that you're a little defeatist in your view? And I'm not arguing that it wouldn't be right of you to be so, but it just seems to me that most environmental policy is reactionary. Until we actually see island states drowning in the Caribbean, that's when people start to think, well, there's a problem, maybe we should start now addressing it. Seeing as that most of our environmental policy right now is reactionary, realistically, what is an actionable step to be taken right now?
Continue what you're doing, because American blog is brilliant. That's why I agreed to do interview. So actually, what you're doing, guys, is brilliant. Carry on. Of course, please add a little more ecological articles. But to return to the point that you made, this is absolutely not defeatist. This is based on realism. This is based on the understanding of human nature. This is understanding of human evolution. Real ecology never said that protection of environment has to look a certain way. You might have a better solution than real ecology. That's absolutely no problem at all. Real ecology is something voluntary. It's something actually which starts inside of you. So you change yourself first. If you set up a group, for example, 50 people, where everybody will change themselves first in terms of that when a problem arises, they will not run away like rabbits, then it's fine. Assemble such a crew and then start creating, I don't know, a farm or a political party, whatever. Real ecology is open to any means necessary to stop the ecocide. That's without any doubt. Real ecology is only an alternative, which is not showing a way actually how to achieve something. It's actually showing how nature feels in terms of the destruction that we do. So actually it's not something, a book or a blueprint that you have to follow. It's more than like a cry out of nature. It actually says that there's one person who feels the pain that nature's feeling, and this is what it actually saying. I never said and never will say that whatever you do is wrong. So whatever you do and you think it's the best, continue and never give up.
The people who understand this cry from nature tend to not have children and drop out of society. And so they breed themselves out of the gene pool, which in a Darwinian sense produces human beings who are more likely to be selfish. Does real ecology address a way of reversing that process?
The problem is very simple. Most of the people that I know of, and some of them I know personally, that actually are real ecologists, are people who have extreme problems finding a mate. So even if their gene pool would be one of the best, they don't have a means to breed new real ecologists. And we can see from history and just look around that if you are a piano player and there's no guarantee your offspring will be players. So this doesn't happen all the time. What you are saying, which actually real ecology addresses, that yes, intelligent people should have more kids. And yes, stupid people should have less kids. That's understandable. But I cannot answer your question. This is beyond real ecology.
What do you mean by problems finding a mate? Are you just suggesting that's because of a general decline of human quality? Or what kind of challenges are you talking about specifically?
The problem is that I, as a real ecologist, voluntarily decided not to have kids in terms of not contributing to overpopulation. But the people that I know would like to have children because real ecology claims it's not the children that are the problem. The problem is the ecoprint. If you look back, real ecology uses an example. If you look at Aboriginal Australia, the year 1317, they had, for example, 20 children. Some of them died, but the ecoprint was 0%. So if you're intelligent, you can have 20 intelligent children, no problem. If you can achieve that the ecoprint will be zero, fine, go ahead. When it comes to mates, the problem is with every philosophy or, for example, with every subculture, the ratio of men and women, it's always like 10 to 1, sometimes even 20 to 1. There exist women which are brilliant, but the ratio between brilliant women and brilliant men is like 20 to 1. So actually 19 guys will end up with empty hands. On the other side, some suggest that it's enough to find healthy female. The problem is with modern society, it's very hard to escape modern society. So even if you won't find a healthy woman, you don't have to find a real ecologist woman or a deep ecologist woman. It's actually very hard in today's society to go somewhere out and start a simple life. One of the advocates of such a thing is Mark Vikernes. And when you see his videos, what he recommends to people, everybody in comment section writes, it's a brilliant idea, and all they have is excuses why it's not possible. In most cases, these excuses are real. It's not possible.
Instead of seeing ourselves at a peak of evolution, like Fred Nietzsche, I see us as actually in a valley. Someone presented to me a very simple formulation of this. 10% of humanity are good people, and 90% are assholes. Is it possible that the 10% could stick with each other and allow the 90% to die off, knowing that in humanity's history, we've had many such bottlenecks? If there were this kind of radical, environmentally aware selfishness, where people stuck to a group that wasn't defined, for example, purely by a national label or by economic status or something else, do you think humanity could evolve to the next level?
What is more important than what you're trying to say is the attempt. According to Real Ecology, humans reach their peak and actually they're going down. That's what we see. That's the age of decadence, I call it. I completely agree with you, as you are one of the thinkers, that you want to build a ramp on the top of the peak. Maybe that peak will lead to the stars and everything will be fine. What I'm saying is, it's not the outcome what matters, it's the effort what matters. So if you believe in something like that and you change your life to reach this peak or build another peak, that's fine. That's completely fine. What I'm saying is that nature at this point is actually losing so much of its potential that, for example, if you reach some kind of peak where you can avoid the ecocide, the damage would be too much. When I talk about evolution, that we reach the top and then we're going downhill, maybe this downhill is actually part of the evolution. It only looks like that we're going downhill, but actually we're going up. In terms of if you want to balance the world population, obviously you have to reach some point where they will do all kinds of stupid things. The big amount of stupidity or idiocy will actually lead to their demise, which will be fine because if you're not a stupid idiot, then obviously this will not concern you. If you believe that this evolution can reach more than what Real Ecology proposes, that's absolutely fine. Real Ecology doesn't deal with philosophical questions about human evolution. He actually only states that in this particular point of evolution, I might be wrong, that we're going downhill. The ecocide is so big that actually until we reach the bottom or we reach another top, most of the wilderness and biodiversity will be destroyed. And that's what bothers Real Ecology. And the book is actually a cry out about this. A very good example, which I use in the book, is what David Fincher, the director, said, that there's nothing more to hunt, there's nothing more to overcome. So we become people which only enjoy shopping. So the problem is very simple. If you have a planet this our size and you actually visit and explore everything else, you want to explore further. The problem is that only a certain amount of people actually are able to do this. It's called reach for the stars. The rest will only follow, or in this case, because it's too much humans on the planet, actually in between you find a way to reach the stars, this mass of humans will only destroy whatever's left. So when you come back from the stars to the planet, all you will find is a wasteland.
Let's say, for example, that we brought about a solution where we created a dramatic shift in social order. We had everyone living on a farm that is permaculture-based, or it could be forest garden land, and that we essentially deny them corporate comforts to food. We denied them centralized supply chains. Do you think this is doable? Do you think that this could be an appropriate course?
If you are able to do this, you have my 100% support. Real Ecology is not based on you're not doing something what I believe in, you're doing it wrong. That's absolutely not the case. As long as you don't ignore the problem of overpopulation and find some realistic solution, Real Ecology is behind you 100%.
If we can awaken those who are capable of understanding and they are able to shift the social order from being ruled by the masses to being ruled by the smartest, then it's very possible we have a chance to change something and at least stop going down this horrible path. And I think your book is a wonderful help in doing that. Can you give us a little information on the book? When did you write it? How long did it take? And how can people get a hold of it?
The whole idea was born years ago. To be honest with you, I don't remember exactly when. What actually happened in 2010, I had what's called a spiritual awakening. And in light of that, I wrote the book for personal use. That book was actually called Man in the Mirror, and it was about how to change yourself, how to become something more. And one of the chapters was ecology. So actually that small chapter grew to become a whole book. So the book was actually finished 2016 when it was self-published. I never really actually wanted to write an ecological book at all. It's like naturally evolved. I rather prefer sci-fi, which I already wrote a book, or fantasy, which I'm writing now. Not in terms of fantasy like Lord of the Rings. It's like fantasy. What would happen if the system that we live in would collapse? Which, of course, I don't leave out the ecological question. So the book is available on sale through Amazon. There's a nice review on the website. Read it and then obviously follow the directions where to buy it.
Can Can you tell us a little about your fiction book, The Spheres, and what the story is about and who might enjoy it?
The Spheres is a sci-fi book based on a very simple notion. Every time that you see or read about extraterrestrials coming to Earth or just existing, everybody is coming up with ideas how they look like. So everybody is racing in bringing a more sophisticated, more shocking, more interesting version of the aliens. Back then, they were small, 1 meter tall green guys, and today they are in any other form that you can imagine. Everybody's coming up with new versions of aliens, how they look, what they do, what would happen. The Spheres is based on a very simple notion: what would happen if the aliens would come to planet Earth and actually would do nothing at all? So they would look like small spheres, the size of a ball, you know, just hovering there, and they would actually bring nothing. Actually, we could take nothing from them. So this is actually what fascinated me, that apart from other books, this actually focuses not on aliens, but on us, because aliens act as a mirror. This book actually writes what I think would happen, what different cultures would do, what different nations would do, because there are political interests, there are technological interests. If aliens would come, we would like to have their technology, we would be afraid, and so forth. And to make the book interesting in my terms is because I like hiking and traveling. It's like I wrapped it up in a story that the guy is visiting all these fears that came to Earth and actually is finding out all the different reactions from different people to the spheres themselves, to the fact that they didn't brought nothing. Also, the interesting bit is that they left after some time. So also the question of communication, the question of what they will actually think about us comes to play as well.
I really enjoy your writing, and I think other people will as well. Can you tell us how people can stay in touch with what you're doing and how they can read more about you?
There's a website, worldofgunnar.net, where you can find some basic information about me and all the books that I sell featured.
Well, everyone, this is Brett Stevens, myself, James Price, and Kjeldulf Gunnar Larsen here, signing off. Till next time.